You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
The press conference in Helsinki between President Trump and Vladimir Putin has wrapped up. We kick off the show with the latest.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive.
Standing side by side in identical podiums, you had President Trump insisting yet again today that there was no collusion and that he ran a clean campaign. Quote, "There was no collusion at all and everyone knows it," Trump said. Soon thereafter, Russian President Vladimir Putin denied Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election. Trump declined to endorse the U.S. intelligence community's assessment that Russia interfered in the election, saying Putin was, quote, extremely strong and powerful in his denial.
Welcome back, Pamela.
Yeah, it's good to be back, buddy.
Outstanding. Pamela, back in all things are normal in the world again. And by normal, I mean Donald Trump is trashing the United States and taking the words of the word of the Russians over the word of Americans once again. I don't know if there's ever been a worse display of anti-American, un-American, unpatriotic fervor than what I just saw the current occupant of the White House and do in front of the world media and standing next to the thug dictator of Russia.
Okay, you are fired up about this. So we were just sitting in our show prep room, folks, listening to the press conference, and it was just that, a press conference with Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, where they did take questions from the press.
Yeah.
These two leaders who both hate the free press took questions from the press, and I was listening to it, got to be informed, following it here and there. You, though, were fired up. Why were you so fired up about what you just heard in the last few minutes, Bruce?
Well, I thought some of the, maybe just from a macro level, reporters, not Russian reporters, because they know better than to ask a question. They get stabbed with poison and die or get shot in the street. American and Western reporters ask questions of Vladimir Putin about things like meddling in an election,
right,
undermining this, the Mueller report, the indictments on Friday. He didn't have to answer. The questions directed at Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump immediately jumped in and came to the defense of a Russian dictator and took the word of the Russian dictator and took that opportunity to attack the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, and a variety of other American institutions.
He also repeatedly asked about the Democratic National Committee's email server, Hillary Clinton's missing emails.
Those weren't questions.
It was interesting. It was quite, frankly, it was fascinating to watch because I picked up on that as well. When the reporter would ask a question of President Putin,
they would literally
President
ask the question.
Trump would begin to answer, which was really strange. And some of the other comments that the president made were quite strange as well. Take a listen to this one.
Our relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah, well, so do I, because you've completely capitulated to, and you're obviously in
good
the back
word
pocket of Vladimir Putin. We have a better relationship with Russia now because Russia is pulling the strings, because you don't have the guts to stand up to Vladimir Putin, because for whatever, I don't know the reason. I don't know what it is. But he stood next to him like a lapdog, and Putin smiled and giggled the entire time because Donald Trump defended Russia, Putin, at the GRU, and Russia's. Basically, he takes Vladimir Putin's word for it. Vladimir Putin said he didn't do it, so obviously he didn't do it. Come on. Why would Putin lie to him? Hey, by the way, the same Vladimir Putin says he didn't invade the Ukraine. The same Vladimir Putin that said he wasn't going to do anything in Crimea. The same Vladimir Putin that said they had nothing to do with the shooting down of the Malaysian airline. That Vladimir, why would you ever not take his word? The man is a bastion of honesty.
You are on fire this morning,
because
my friend.
We have a traitor in the White House who takes the word of a Russian dictator over the word of American investigators, facts, and evidence.
Okay, so when President Vladimir Putin actually had an opportunity to answer the question about election meddling, here's what he said through a translator.
The Russian state has never interfered and is not going to interfere into internal American affairs, including election process.
Okay, they're currently trying to meddle in the midterm election now.
Who are you going to believe? Your lying eyes or Vladimir Putin?
You know, you've got President Trump saying, all I can do is ask the question whether Russia meddled in the 2016 election. No, you are the president and the leader of the free world. You can do a lot more than just ask that question. And there's going to be a lot, folks, of people diving into the answers that Trump gave and the body language of Vladimir Putin and all of these types of things. Here's the big question for me, and that is why? Why is this president, our president, President Trump, defending Vladimir Putin to the end of the earth? It just seems odd to me, whether you are a Trump supporter or whether you're not a Trump supporter. Think of it from like a critical thinking standpoint. Why would our president defend a Russian dictator so much more than even our allies? In fact, over the weekend, calling our allies foes, the EU being like the foe. It's strange to
Canada,
me. It leads me
bad, Russia good.
It leads me to believe, and we have a whole investigation going on about it, I know, folks, but it leads me to believe that he's hiding something. He's been kissing up to Putin for so long, even in some of the tweets that the president sent out this morning.
Anti-American, unpatriotic tweets. Bordering on treason. Trump, getting to high crimes and misdemeanors.
Trump says he knows who to blame for the poor U.S.-Russia relations, and he blames the United States.
It's our fault.
You're throwing your own country under the bus before you go to meet another world leader. Like, you just don't do that. Bad form.
It's well past. Listen, of course we have bad form. He's a complete doofus, for goodness sakes. There's not, bad form is expected. There's nothing in this that is unexpected. I think the enthusiasm in which he defended Russia is what is most surprising. The enthusiasm and the deflection that Trump took to blame Americans and America for the problems that Russia created. The proven, fact-based, indictment-laden things that Russia had done to undermine U.S. elections, to undermine U.S. institutions. Donald Trump says, hey, you guys didn't go far enough, Vlad. Don't worry. I'll finish it off.
All right. So if you missed that press conference, it was pretty incredible. But we're already getting reaction from folks, not just Bruce, who's quite fired up about it, but former CIA director John Brennan, chiming in on this. Here's a little bit of what he's had to say.
I'm at a loss of words to describe just how outrageous his words, his statements, his behavior has been. And one can only conclude that he fears Vladimir Putin, and that one-on-one discussion, who knows what was discussed there, and how Mr. Putin now is the master puppeteer of Donald Trump, the person who is in our Oval Office. Outrageous.
Didn't need nukes, didn't have to invade. Vladimir Putin is having all of the influence in the world he needs over the United States, and he's doing it through the current occupant of the White House. I hesitate to call him president at this point because I think he is treasonous and possibly the Manchurian candidate at this point. He's doing Vladimir Putin's bidding, not only on the world stage, but here in the United States. It is disgusting for an American president to act this way. It's disgusting for an American citizen to act this way. Don't wrap yourself in the flag. Don't call yourself patriotic. You're a Russian.
Well, you know what? Get ready for it, Bruce, because apparently we're going to have more of this. Why?
It's in the interest of both of our countries to continue our conversation, and we have agreed to do so. I'm sure we'll be meeting again in the future, often.
Yeah, well, listen, and the Cult 45, the Trampanzees, I'm uninterested in your defense of your Russian comrades. Listen, this isn't it, the thing. It upsets liberals, and so I'm happy with it. So you choose Russia's side over the American side. I'm not a liberal, by the way. I'm more conservative than any Trumpanzee out there. And the reality is, I care about this country more than I care about a Russian plant.
All right. So a little bit more from the former head of the CIA. Again, the CIA, who has dealt with Russia and their intelligence agents, of which Vladimir Putin is one. Here's what John Brennan had to say just moments ago about what just transpired up at the podium with both President Trump and President Vladimir Putin. Take a listen.
I think you have now his demonstrated unwillingness, maybe inability, to protect this country's interests. I think this is a time for all Americans to rally and to say, Mr. Trump, you are not doing what is necessary in order to keep this country strong and safe. And Mr. Putin must be now with his team just rejoicing in what has happened in Helsinki.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting, Bruce, to see how congressmen and senators from both sides of the aisle, primarily from the Republican side of the aisle, how they spin this, what they have to say about it. I mean, there have been some strong tweets that have come out.
Make Russia great again.
But, I mean, to take a stand after witnessing that, it'll be interesting to see.
The Lead brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive, online at burgeford.com. Do you have a general expectation of privacy in public? What if somebody takes your picture in public? What if it becomes a meme? What if it goes viral? Do you have any recourse to it? There's actually a story that kind of has a lot of these pieces in it. You might think it's a good thing. Does the subject think it's a good thing?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Pamela, you need to explain plane bay, P-L-A-N-E, like airplane.
Plane bay. Yes.
Well, maybe we need to start with bay. Do you think everybody...
I think I know. I mean, how would you define it?
Well, it stands for something.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. What does I don't know what it stands for.
Bay means... what is it again? It was... oh, God. Why am I freezing on that?
I just think of like your sweetie.
Yeah.
Hey, bae, your sweetie is right, my bae or
but
whatever.
Above all else, what was it again?
You guys are showing your age.
I know.
Oh, come on, millennial.
Before anyone else.
Before anyone else.
Okay.
That's what it means.
All
before
right.
anyone else. So you're
I'm
sweetie,
married,
you're,
okay?
the apple of your eye. How about this? It's the 2016, I think, when it started popping up, version of you're the apple of my eye. You're bae.
Boy, now that's bae. Really dating.
You like that?
Sweetie, honey, baby. Okay, yeah. Let's go with that.
Okay.
So back on July 3rd, you may have followed this story. It was a story of a woman who was tweeting photos and updates of this love story that unfolded before her on an Alaska Airlines flight. Now, she asked this woman to move seats so that she could sit next to her boyfriend.
Okay.
The stranger obliged. Now,
not unusual. Can
no,
I sit?
No.
Can we swap seats? And yeah.
The woman joked with her boyfriend that the woman's new seatmate may be the love of her life, and then began taking photos of them because they were sitting right in front of her, and was live tweeting and documenting their conversation, their trips, even followed them after they got off the plane, photographing them from behind. And this story that was being live tweeted was followed and liked and retweeted some 20,000 times. All right. So you've got Plain Bay, which is the dude.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you've got the pretty plain girl.
Got it.
All right. That's the couple that was being tweeted about.
Basically, the live tweeted during this flight. And everyone's
so many
following
people,
along.
Yeah. You know, like finding love at 30,000 feet. You know, things like this. You had Monica Lewinsky even joking about how when she gets on the plane, her plane, she's like, oh, yeah, I hope I have some hot professional soccer player sit next to me. Because that's what the guy was on the plane. All right. So anyway, people were talking about it.
Neck tattoos like the Brazilian players.
Plain Bay even went on like Good Morning America, was making the rounds. And then this comes out. The pretty plain girl. The chick involved in all of
this. The girl in this.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Pretty plain girl.
She says this. I did not ask for... Did not seek attention. Hashtag Plain Bay is not romance. It is a digital age cautionary tale about privacy, identity, ethics, and consent.
Okay, so she's saying that in and I can imagine, she was unaware that her boyfriend-girlfriend relationship on the plane was basically being broadcast to the world, complete with pictures and whatnot, and that she felt an invasion of her privacy that... Because she sat next to her boyfriend on a plane and they were not inappropriate. Nothing's being they were affectionate. They were this example of a good couple. But she says, I didn't want to be this poster child for this. And now all of a sudden I'm you know, I'm a meme, for lack of a better term.
She goes on to say, without my knowledge or consent, another passenger photographed me, recorded my conversation with a seatmate. Since then, my personal information has been widely distributed online.
They, found out who she was.
Publicly discussed my private life based on patently false information. I've been doxxed, shamed, insulted, harassed. Voyeurs have come looking for me online and in the real world. I did not ask for, do not seek this attention. Please continue to respect my privacy and my desire to remain anonymous. So, here's the thing that kind of just jumped out to me.
Okay.
Is there privacy in public?
Yeah, that's the point where I can't deny or I'm not going to tell her she's wrong. How do you get that toothpaste back in the tube? How many of you have either taken a picture of somebody? There's entire websites like People of Walmart. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
or you see somebody doing something silly on a plane or somewhere. You video them. You post a video. Or you like one or you share one of people who they don't know they're the subject of this. You didn't get written consent from them to use their name or their likeness or their stupid moment. That's half of the internet is people that don't know they're on the internet.
Yeah, but still, I think that, like, I get what she's saying. This went viral. Nobody really expected it to go viral. And because of nothing she did, her entire life has been turned upside down. I mean, that is a cautionary tale to me. And one of those, I mean, she did nothing except switch seats, which I'm sure she really regrets now. No good deed goes unpunished, right? Is there an expectation of privacy in public? Chime in on our open mic line, 602-200-2733. Was this a breach of privacy? 602-200-2733, the open mic line, brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty, East Valley.
Well, and if it is, how do you go about getting the consent of everyone you take pictures of, tweet about, Facebook about, you see Snapchat?
How about we just don't tweet and talk about other people that, like, it's none of our business?
Have you seen the internet?
Yeah.
Have you seen the internet?
I don't engage in that stuff.
Sacha Baron Cohen, comedian, actor, you know him better as his characters, has a new show out, and he's duping politicians. He got a few of them last night. We'll tell you what went down. Coming up next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You may not know the name Sacha Baron Cohen. You may know his characters, Borat, Ali G, Bruno. They made movies with them and whatnot. Basically, he is a British comedian actor who uses disguises and creates characters to do interviews with, and I think his goal is to make people uncomfortable or mock them. I will acknowledge that. So he has a new show on Showtime that debuted last night. As of right now, I think he has four different characters he's used. They've been doing this for over a year, filming. Because once the characters get out, you can't do it anymore because people are like on to the joke.
Right.
But so all of these have already been filmed and done. Last night was the first show. There's a couple of just cringe-worthy characters. Like, it's uncomfortable to watch in places. I won't tell you that I loved the whole show. But the thing that a lot of people are talking about is he created a character who's an Israeli anti-terrorism expert. Okay, so imagine what you think an Israeli anti-terrorism expert is, and went about meeting with pro-Second Amendment, pro-NRA, pro-gun people and politicians, and had an what I think most people would think was a pretty extreme idea of arming kindergartners.
Wait, let that sink in a second there. Don't just gloss over that. Arming kindergartners. What were they calling it?
The kindergartens.
So kindergartners
would be trained to use firearms to prevent school shootings. So that is the, like, goofy premise, the outrageous premise that he comes up with, right?
So then he goes and he interviews a lot of people. We're going to get to our elected political heroes here in just a moment. But first, he starts off with a guy by the name of Philip Van Cleve. Now, Philip Van Cleve is a gun rights advocate. He's president of Virginia's Citizens Defense League. He makes the rounds.
Shows up on TV
all the time.
Yeah,
right.
Seen him.
And after they do their little interview, they then get together to put together what would, in our world, we call it like a PSA, a public service announcement, right? And what you've got and what you're seeing here is you've got Philip over here, and then you've got Sacha Baron Cohen, who's playing the Israeli terrorist
expert, anti-terrorism expert, yeah.
And behind them is obviously like a green screen, but it is this animated classroom, right?
Looks like a
cartoon.
Like a little kiddies cartoon show with real life humans standing in front of cartoons.
And he actually gets this gun rights advocate to play along as to how to teach kids.
Yeah.
Kindergartners, what are they calling them?
Kinderguardians.
Okay. How to load a gun, shoot a gun. Just
get
take
the bad
a
guy.
Take a listen. No joke, folks. This actually happened.
Today, we're going to teach you how you can stop these naughty men and have them take a long nap.
That's right. And that's why you're going to meet a friend of mine. His name is Papi Pistol. Now, Philip, will you show us how to feed Papi Pistol?
To feed him, take his lunchbox and push it into his tummy like this. Just remember to point Puppy Pistol's mouth right at the middle of the bad man. If he has a big fat tummy, point at that.
Yeah, they're loading a real gun. These aren't toys. And so people are outraged. I don't quite understand the outrage. The are you outraged that Sacha Baron Cohen created a fake Israeli terrorist expert who wants to arm kindergartners? Or are you more outraged that we found literally sitting American politicians, congressmen, who think it's a good idea?
Or maybe you have like a former United States senator like Trent Lott.
Oh, Trent Lott, yeah.
I support the Kindergartens program. We in America would be wise to implement it too. It's something that we should think about in America, about putting guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, good guys, whether they be teachers or whether they actually be talented children or highly trained preschoolers.
Highly trained.
That is former Senator Trent Lott using the term highly trained preschoolers in the idea of arming kindergartners to prevent school shooting. So it's such an outlandish premise. You got to believe, and I'm sure there's outtakes of people that go, this is crazy, I'm not going to do it. Okay, fine. Or you're a lunatic. Or this must be a joke. None of these guys appear to be, they don't think it's a joke. They're going along with it, and they're reading the script, and they're appearing in this fake public service announcement, including actual members of Congress right now.
Right. Actual members of Congress right now, like Congressman Joe Wilson.
A three-year-old cannot defend itself from an assault rifle by throwing a Hello Kitty pencil case at it. Our founding fathers did not put an age limit on the Second Amendment.
Okay. Well, you've got that. You also have former Congressman Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh, yeah.
The intensive three-week kindergarten course introduces specially selected children from 12 to 4 years old to pistols, rifles.
12 to 4 years old? What?
Again, which is worse? Going to people with the crazy idea of arming 3- and 4-year-olds or people who think it's a good idea and are willing to appear in your public service announcement,
you know,
and defend the idea.
Here's where...
Which is worse?
Well, there's so much that's bad about this. Okay, so it's bad that you actually have former elected politicians and current politicians who are so entrenched in the Second Amendment that they actually were duped by a comedian to support arming 3- and 4- and 5-year-olds. 3- and 4- and 5-year-olds, they're not afraid of guns, hence the reason why you've got to lock them up if you are a responsible gun owner. But there's also something else that I take exception with in this, Bruce, and it might shock you a little bit. It's the fact that Sacha Baron Cohen actually even did this. I understand why he did it.
Uh-huh.
He wanted to show the
hypocrisy.
Exactamundo. I get all of that. But in today's day and age of fake news.
Yeah.
And, you know, you give...
What can you believe? What can't you believe?
Exactly. Back when Borat happened in, what, 2006 or so?
That's nice.
You didn't have Facebook as popular as it is right now. You didn't have YouTube. You didn't have all of this news and all of these people pulling pranks and what's real and what's fake. Today's culture for which this has been put on for Showtime is very different than Ali G or Borat
but
or
doesn't
Bruno.
That mean, which is maybe what's more
it's dangerous.
Crazy about it.
It can be dangerous.
That and also that you have to be so extreme to stand out in that sense. I mean, if they can be duped, and these, we had a whole, you were gone last week, Pamela.
Yeah.
So there's a whole list of people that now realize they've been punked. Sarah Palin, Dick Cheney, Sheriff Joe. They haven't been on the show yet. Those people I'm saying. There's 7 weeks of this show. But if this is where it's going, I can't imagine the types of things that came out of their mouth or that they agreed to.
React to this. Just react to this. What you've just heard. Is this dangerous to do in today's climate of fake news? And just like, again, the idea of kindergartens and you actually having politicians that are thinking this a good idea. There's a lot to react to, folks, on our open mic line. 602-200-2733. We want to hear from you. 602-200-2733. Open mic brought to you by Carol Royce with Keller Williams Realty East Valley.
I mean, I get where you're going with that. I think that's why it's... How is it? How are people that gullible in this day and age, I guess? Some people walked out of interviews. Some people wouldn't be interviewed by him. These are the ones that stuck around and said, oh, yeah, I'll read your PSA. Guns in 3-year-old's hands? That sounds like a hell of an idea. Forget about fast cars. There's a new way to have a midlife crisis, and it doesn't involve a convertible.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
So midlife crisis. I'm not exactly sure what the age is of it. I'm still going through the teenage years, so I'll let you know when I have a problem with midlife crisis.
But what year do you think you were stuck at as
me?
A teenager? Yeah.
I'm stuck at around 16 or 17.
Yeah, I was going to say 16, 17.
You give me that?
Yeah.
I just decided never to move on from
there.
Pretty good. Solid years. I'm good.
Go with it.
Just plant me your flag and
just
say
go with it.
The rest of you people can grow up. Screw this noise. But... if I say midlife crisis, like this idea comes to my head of a guy.
Okay, because you're a guy, so it's going to come. Okay.
Of a guy. Like I see them.
A guy.
They've got the hair plugs. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they've got oh, that looks totally natural. They've got the hair plugs on top of their head to cover their bald spot. And they're driving around in a red convertible.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Am I right?
Sure. And then.
Like that's kind of the midlife crisis. Like, dude. Seriously, you're like a walking stereotype.
And then to be even more stereotypical, they divorce their wife and they get some 20-something, right?
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, yeah,
not
yeah,
dating
yeah.
women of appropriate age.
Right, exactly.
I think is what I've been accused of on a variety of occasions.
Yes. Well, you're stuck at 17.
There's
that. Okay, so you're dating at, never mind.
Slightly older.
Anyhow, who? So the idea of this midlife crisis and the image that pops up into your mind when I say that.
Is it a similar image?
Oh,
you're there with me? Okay.
Totally. But... it's kind of changing nowadays. The idea of what having a midlife crisis looks at. I came across this article yesterday, and I found it quite fascinating because I just had a big birthday.
Yep.
Yes, I'll say it on the air. I turned 40.
Happy birthday.
In April. And so that's kind of like the time where people are like, whoa, hey, you know, midlife kind of thing. Hopefully I live a little longer than that, but you know, we'll see what happens.
But it's a milestone
it's
birthday.
It's most definitely
right?
a milestone. And
I don't
also
mean it's a bad
you,
thing. It's a milestone.
But it also has you like thinking about life a little differently. And in today's day and age, it's an era of mindfulness. And so people are kind of pursuing this meaningful life. And so getting a sports car isn't necessarily what we're seeing when it comes to midlife anymore. You've got people that are taking these seminars or they're doing different things. And what I've been able to kind of cultivate from it, Bruce, is that people are looking for for engagement, a little bit more of a way to reinvent themselves. Mm-hmm. So instead of just, you know, getting the hair plugs and the sports car, they might be going back to things that they did in high school or their 20s, like passions that they were once really engaged in that probably their friends nowadays didn't even know that they did because they lost that part of them.
Well, I can certainly understand, and on a certain level, that you can't do the things that the last generation did. Like, your midlife crisis has to look different. But this actually sounds like more positive.
Yeah,
too.
I don't think this is just different for the sake of being different.
No, but I will acknowledge. But you're talking about people that grew up in a different age, and that being maybe, I can't believe I'm saying, maybe a little less materialistic and more, like, sort of mindful, mm-hmm. mindfulness. This is a positive, though, right? There's no negative that comes out of reaching a midlife crisis and saying, you know what? I'm going to chase passion and creativity as opposed to ASU sophomores.
Well, there you go. People asking themselves, you know, is this all there is? And going, no, there isn't. For instance, me, you know, I've always wanted to learn how to play the guitar. And I have a guitar.
Okay.
And I've tried to, you know, pick up some things on YouTube. I played instruments growing up. That's probably something that you didn't know about me. I played the clarinet.
The clarinet!
And the French horn.
No, see, I didn't.
And the mellophone.
Were you in band?
I was.
Because I thought you were a cheerleader, and I didn't think you could be cheerleader and band.
Well, I started. See, here's these things. You don't know these things.
I started off in symphony band.
Yep, yep.
Give me that.
And then I was actually even in the marching band for a little while.
But you certainly can't do marching band and cheerleading at the same time.
My dad almost crashed the car when I told him I wanted to quit marching band and try out for cheerleading. He was like, what? But yeah, those are those things that like we did growing up.
It's because the captain of the football team never wanted to date the clarinet player.
I didn't care about the captain of the football team. But, you know, I want to learn how to play guitar. And so I've reached out to a couple of instructors out in the East Valley, and I'm kind of, you know, tinkering around with it. Something for me. And in that creativity side of it, it's not about quitting my job as a talk show host and going to become an artist.
I'm going to go live in Valley.
No, not at all.
But it's sunsets.
It's about playing more. It's about, you know, doing things that kind of fulfill you.
So we at the beginning of this, we talked about like this male version of a midlife crisis, mm-hmm. the convertible and the hair plugs mm-hmm. and all that stuff. What is the female version of that?
What is the, the stereotypical?
From a female standpoint, because I don't know if I know.
I don't know.
I'm being honest.
This
isn't a quiz. Whatever you say, I acknowledge. I'm not. What is the female midlife crisis look like?
That's a great question. I think that there's usually some exercise involved and dieting involved in trying to get your body back to a shape that it was in your 20s, which will never happen.
It's becoming a yoga instructor, being super tan and dating guys half
your age. You gotta have a tan. You gotta have a tan.
I'm assuming there's a tan
and
involved.
There may be a pool boy involved.
And a pool boy. There we go. The pool boy.
No, but I think
if
you'd
seen my pool boy, you would never have gone that direction.
But I think this version of the new midlife crisis, creativity, is so much healthier than the stereotypical version that may be popping into your mind right now.
I'm going to be working on that stereotype. Remember, stereotypes, they're bad, right? We all say, they only work if there's an element of truth to them. Keep that in mind. Like, a stereotype doesn't work if there's no truth to it. Then you're just people looking, what the hell are you talking about? But I talk about a guy in a convertible with
hair plugs and a 20-year-old
girlfriend. At age 50 and a 20-year-old girlfriend.
Yep.
You're like, yeah, I know exactly. That works. That works. It's a stereotype because it's true. Okay. So we, Arizonians, I said that wrong on purpose, are going to be able to vote on education. There's going to be a couple props on the ballot in November. But will one of them impact negatively Arizona's economy? The Think Before You Vote. We'll talk about the Invest in Ed initiative. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.